In the midst of carnage and chaos and blowing snow, he found Dolorous Ed sitting on his garret, playing Black Banner on a spear. "Sam," Ed said when he saw him, "would you wake me, please? I'm having this terrible nightmare." Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with a second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book. Hey guys, Will here, throwing in a quick blurb before we get further into the episode itself. Just want to remind everybody you still have time to get signed up for the First Player Championship at www.firstplayerchampionship.com. That's going to redirect you to the tabletop.events page, and we're going to have a lot of great prizes there. Both Melee and Joust, of course, get guaranteed seats at Worlds. The Melee winner is going to get the chance to be on next year's First Player token. All sorts of fun. Cookout at my place. Going to be a great time. As well, I want to reiterate, U.S. Nationals, Labor Day weekend, www.agotnationals.com. We're working on some exciting stuff for that tournament as well. And also, thank you to all of our wonderful Patreons or patrons who support us on Patreon. So please consider backing the show and helping us continue to do cool stuff for the community.
Is the nightmare the community right now?
Ooh, I don't know what it
is. Opening with the salt blazer.
How can you be salty with Dolorous Ed? I don't get it.
He's the king of salt. He's one of my favorite characters. I even like him on the show.
Agreed. He's not used nearly enough on the show, though.
Hold on. Spoiler alert. On the show, he's Lord Commander. So.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah, they haven't, mentioned the Night's Watch in the last season, but He's definitely one of the more prominent Night's Watch characters.
You know. As prominent as you can be for something that is happening entirely off screen.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed.
But he's the Lord of Salt, the King of Salt.
That's right.
The King of Dolorous Salt Glazer. And Rock? Well, welcome back to episode 334 of The White Book. You're here with Team Hedge Knight. Myself, Will, also Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Roy.
Ahoy hoy.
And Jesse.
Hey, how's it going?
It feels like we haven't done one of these episodes in a million years. We did that marathon session.
Yeah.
Beloved by Jesse's fellow Wars to Come hosts. Wait, I had to, at 2 o'clock in the morning, put them to task about how good our White Book review episodes are at 4 in the morning.
I still haven't watched that episode. I just heard about it because it was the one Wars to Come episode I was not on.
But that was a fun experience because I was just Ala had fallen asleep. My best friend and his wife had left back to go to the Airbnb. And I was like, oh, I'll put some Twitch on to fall asleep to. And I saw Wars to Come, and then I spent an hour in chat trolling Alejandro and CT and Jesse. or Jess rather.
Yeah, yeah, not me. Fun.
No, it was Jess.
How old? How drunk were you?
Oh, I was extremely drunk. It was fun.
Yeah, it really has been a long time. It's been, thanks to you know, the delay and the way we doubled up, it's been like a month since we've done this, hasn't it? Jeez.
Yeah. It was like just after Jesse's tournament, I think, the last time, or just before that we had done it. So
it was before.
It was before, yeah. So it's been like a month.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what? I think the only way we're going to solve this and keep from diving down those roads again is to go ahead and jump right into the brand new topic for this week on the White Book. This one's a little pet project of Roy's, who's done a lot of the hustle and legwork on it for us this week. So he gets to kind of lead that discussion while the rest of us naysay. So let's see what happens here. What you got for us, Roy?
So Combo, in case you missed it, is back in the discussion. Friend of the show, I guess you could say, or at least friend of the Second Sons and Wars to Come, Jake Platt won Canadian Nationals with Combo, which led to Danny issuing the first restricted list for second edition, which the goal was to specifically target these combo decks, or combination decks, as the English call them. But there's recently been a resurgence of these decks, with Darknage sort of pumping out a bunch of them to a variety of people. There was a tournament in Canada that was won. There's a tournament in SoCal that was won by Johnny Wright by it. There was Tom Malucci's stop of the Northeast Championship Tour that was again won by Combo, piloted by Jake Platt. So that's like about three middle-sized tournaments that have been won in the North American scene by Combo, which got me thinking sort of just about like what are the archetypes in archetypes in Game of Thrones. And I had a discussion with Aaron and Scott and Will, and we sort of came up with sort of four broad ones, which is Rush, Control, Aaron's going to hate this one, Mid-Range,
I'm just rolling
and
my
Combo. All right, and I thought it would be good to sort of just discuss these archetypes and define them and come up with some examples of those, of sort of well-known decks, and maybe talk a little bit about sort of sub-themes that sort of run within these archetypes. So where do you guys want to start?
Let's just start at the top of that. Let's start with Rush, because you know our discussion that we had via chat, I think, was maybe not as settled as that introduction might lead listeners to believe. I have some thoughts even on that. So let's go that way.
So a Rush deck is, at least how I would define it, is a deck that tries to get to the win condition, 15 power, the primary win condition, because you can also mill your opponent, to 15 power and as fast as possible. And what separates it, I believe, from combo decks is it can do it over multiple turns. Most Rush decks don't try to win on turn one or even turn two, but they generally use a lot of renowned bodies to outrace their opponent, to sort of gain. So Rush decks try to gain 15 power as fast as possible. They generally don't interact with their opponent. They generally just simply try to gain power over and over and over again with the use of Rush bodies or things like Big Cersei that replicate Rush.
With the exception of one plot, which definitely interacts with your opponent.
Which one, Aaron?
Heads on Spikes.
Heads on Spikes. That's true. Heads on Spikes is an interactive. You can't see because this isn't Second Sons. I'm doing scare quotes right now. Interactive plot of Heads on Spikes. But Rush is just a archetype that is about gain power as fast as possible. It generally doesn't rely on a single set of cards, which is truly what separates it from combo. It generally just relies on a variety of Rush bodies or pseudo Rush abilities like Big Cersei's to sort of just gain power as fast as possible.
You know, I think that is that dovetails nicely into what I was kind of thinking with Combo is, or sorry, with Rush, is that in the kind of classical triangle set up by Magic, right, of what aggro control and combo, Thrones historically had never really quite had that combo aspect. And I largely felt that Rush had filled that particular point on the axis for us. But obviously things have kind of shifted around some recently in the game. But the more I've been thinking about this since Roy kind of pointed it out, the more I'm actually kind of thinking I would almost count Rush as a subset of combo. It's different from aggro in a game like Magic, where you are actively bringing your opponent down to your win condition, but you're also needing to address their threats and keep up this pressure. I think Roy kind of hit the nail on the head when he said that these Rush decks don't really care what the opponent's doing. They have their own very kind of linear game plan. It's not specific to certain pieces or a particular chain of synergies the way a strict combo deck is. But I think the overall game plan of I will do what I need to do to get from 0 to 15 as fast as possible, completely irregardless of what you're doing, is a very similar aspect to that mindset. So I'd maybe even call it a subset of combo.
Here's where I disagree with you, Will, and I want to let the other two host joke. I think it's the fact that Rush decks in general do not rely on those specific synergies. They don't require specifically seeing a set of cards, like the way in which, again, we'll talk specifically about combo, but the way the ladies deck requires you to see ladies, literally all a Rush deck. Like, think about the example of Lanny Crossing. You know, you can win the game without Cersei. There's other renowned bodies. Cersei helps, but you don't rely on her. It's not a Cersei abuse deck per se. And or Tyrell Rush, which you just use all the fact that Tyrell got way too much printed renown, and you just win challenges with it. And you don't need a specific set of cards to abuse and to abuse the synergies within them. You simply just use that keyword renown and other cards like Superior Claim that allow you to claim power by winning challenges and get there. It doesn't require, you know, you could a Tyrell Rush deck, a Tyrell Crossing deck can win whether it sees Renly or it sees Randall or it sees, you know, Mace if you're a Mace version or the Knight of Flowers. You know, seeing all of them is great, or particularly seeing Randall makes the deck a little faster, but you can win the game just seeing one of those powerful, renowned bodies.
Yeah, I don't think it's combo either. I think Rush is Rush. I see they overlap a little bit, but I don't think they're the same thing.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's Rush in the sense, you know, like picking back on a lot of what Roy said. Like, I do think since there's technically not, it's hard to direct correlate what aggro is in this game if you've played Magic, because it is just like heavily different, yeah. Right?
How? Can we explain?
Sure. So,
what is aggro? What is aggro in Magic?
So aggro in Magic is essentially the closest thing we have to it is like a Dothraki burn deck. Yeah. If you know what I'm saying, like just like all military and burn is the same.
I would say if I could help Jesse is that the aggro deck of Magic is still trying to get to its end game as fast as possible, but does still care yes. about the opponent's threats and eliminating them along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think except for Mill, the fact that Magic and Thrones, there's like the win condition of Magic most of the time is it requires your opponent to lose something fundamentally, which Thrones doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. You can just gain 15 power without, and I mean, this is combo decks as well. You can just gain 15 power without interacting with your opponent at all. Whether that's through passive power, whether that's through rush power, whatever. And that's what sort of separates. That's what makes sort of aggro, which, you know, is about clearing your opponent's board of threats, but also just pounding them in the face over and over again. There's no like pounding them in the face over and over again in Thrones, because at the end of the day, 15 power doesn't correlate to what your opponent has or what your opponent does.
Right.
The way in which Magic's life total or Hearthstone or a variety of other cards like games like that.
Yeah, I dig.
But I do think, and that's kind of like makes Rush, I think, really interesting and a very specific thing to Thrones that I kind of like. I think Rush is actually as really frustrating, and you can listen to Buzz go on and on about Rush. It's a pretty interesting archetype that separates it from other card games because of some of the things we've talked about here.
Okay. So...
Rush is always like kind of difficult for me to talk about because I would say it's by far and away my least favorite archetype to play.
Wow, I really like Rush.
Yeah, a lot of
people
do. That's
not fair. I don't really like second edition Rush. I don't play any Rush in second edition. I really like first edition Rush.
I like it better in second
edition. Do the players who played first edition, no offense, Jesse, have an idea about why it's different? Because I'm not quite sure why, but it feels very different.
Partly I'm going to say it's more reliable in second edition. It was always kind of tenuous in first, I felt. I mean, how many events can you name, you know, major events won by a Rush deck in first ed? Offhand, I can think of that one Baratheon Long Voyage deck that Bruno surprised everyone with at a regional. But I feel like it was a pretty
cool one. Martathian was also one stuff.
Oh.
Okay. Siege won every
single one. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's fair. Siege, I do feel like borders into aggro, but was primarily Rush, yeah.
No, Siege is definitely Rush. It was 100% Rush. I think I actually see what the difference is, and I don't like it, but like what Will said triggered it. In first edition, Rush was actually much more like combo than in second edition, where it was very specific to pieces.
I can see that.
And agendas.
Well, in second edition, pieces, agendas, like you were doing a very, very specific one thing with it. Where in second edition, it's sort of just like, wee! And I'm not a big fan of just like, throw it down, win quickly. I'd rather just take my time and like build towards something. And like, that shouldn't be a combo because combo's terrible. But like that, I like building towards
something.
I
think what also separates, and this is particularly clear with Tyrell, but to a lesser extent, Lannister, that Danny and Nate printed a lot more native renown in a lot more durable ways than in first edition. Remember, characters, particularly expensive characters, are much more durable in second edition than they were in first. And so that makes Rush more reliable. Agreed. And like, you just got to look at the Tyrell card pool and sort of see why Rush is a much more powerful archetype, right? Rush was much more of like a meta call, I think, than a stable archetype in first edition. Like Rush worked when really degenerate slow decks were popular. Like Aaron and I playing Siege, you know, when people were playing that horrible boats deck in first edition is a really good example. But Aaron, when you took it to Worlds, right? That time when there's like these degenerate, really slow decks. But now Rush is just always, there's a tournament now, particularly with the card pool, is you will always see a Rush deck or two, whether it's out of Lannister or whether it's out of Tyrell. And that's very different than first edition because there's just more native renown in the card pool, particularly in Lannister and in Tyrell.
So I think that's a big part of what balances the meta, though, in second edition.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, being able to... I'm not a big fan of how swingy it is because I feel like it may be too reliable sometimes. But that I can win just like straight up wander in turn one or two and roll your face off. It's, I guess, helpful is the word, right? Like, it means that like Martell is always going to have that natural predator. Your slower decks are always your Targ Burn is always going to have that natural predator. Where it's just like shit. They saw it fast, and now I'm eating it.
And so that's a valuable thought. It's fun.
That's
having those natural predators.
Ivory. So even though I don't like Rush, I do like love its place in the game, that it's always gonna be okay. I think Rush can get out of hand sometimes, just like any archetype, but there's always a balance to it that usually we see. I think for me, I just love to play decks that don't play to the board very much, like play from the hand a lot. So Rush always like beats me, so I just like have a natural bias towards it.
Against
against it for sure. Like I guess what I'm hinting at is it beats Klansman.
Klansman is kind of, well, is it?
You know what else beats Klansman? Everything.
Unless you're running that second building orders. But have we sort of talked out Rush? I do want to give a couple of examples again. I've mentioned them repeatedly, but I just want to Tyrell Crossing and Lannister Crossing are sort of the platonic ideals in second edition of them. They're just very consistent decks that run a lot of renown or a lot of pseudo renown in the form of like Big Cersei or Mace Tyrell, although not all Tyrell Crossing decks run Mace, but there's these sort of like decks that just consistently gain a lot of power very quickly, but not on specific synergies. And we'll get to decks that rely on a specific set of synergies to win the game sort of as our last villain of the evening. But are we ready to move on to the second archetype?
I think so.
So wait, hang on. We should at least list the major ones. It's really just the Tyrell Crossing and Lanny Crossing. Do we think there's Lanny Crossing. Do we think there's any other Rush? Do we think there's any other agenda that Rush could exist out of?
It's mainly Crossing. The Stark Crossing was a thing for a while.
Stark Crossing can exist.
I think it's consistent. I think it's still the best Stark deck. It's just not as good, right?
It's just not as good as Tyrell or.
I think Stark Wars to Come is better than Stark
Wars. As a Rush deck? We're talking about Rush. Yeah. We're not talking about just in the general meta.
Yeah, I know. It's the best. It's the best Stark Rush deck, Stark Crossing.
Yeah, I mean, most factions can build a Rush deck out of Crossing, which is, again, another difference from first edition, where one Siege, one of the best Rush agendas, was limited to a single faction, and the other good Rush agenda, Power Behind the Throne, was limited to a single faction. Lord of the Crossing being just available to everyone means that literally any faction can build a Rush deck now, even whether or not Martell Crossing Rush is as good as Tyrell Crossing Rush. But no, it's not. But you can build the deck.
You can sure.
So do we? Do we think Adoran's game deck is a Rush deck?
It might be in that.
I think it's much more of a
category.
Isn't that a combo deck?
Ooh. It can be.
See, no, I don't think so. I mean, yes, it can be. But
if we're going off Colt, so the best Doran's game deck we've seen has been Colt Humbert, said he made it to the top 8 in Canadian Nats, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so his was definitely just like little dirtle challenges to the first 4 plots to cycle through. To get like 7 or 8 plots and then a Doran's game to win the game.
So I think that maybe a deck like that could be a control deck, and I think we'll get to that and we'll see whether or not that falls under the control archetype. And then
In first edition that definitely was a control archetype because that's functionally what every Martell deck strategy was. It was play a control game and then drop the first edition Viper to close. So I don't know if it still is, and I think that's where the question lies. Do we consider Targ Crossing a Rush deck the Barristan style? Because I don't consider regular Targ Crossing a Rush at all.
The Barristan style
that wins like gets a billion power and does 50 million challenges with a standing Barristan? Yeah, of course.
Sounds very rushy.
Yeah. So would that be the third best Rush deck we'd say?
Probably.
Third best?
Do we think that's better than Stark Crossing is what I'm asking.
Is it better than Greyjoy Crossing? Because you're also leaving out Greyjoy
Crossing.
I don't think it's better than... I don't think it's better than. So what do we say? Number one was Lanny. Tyrell.
Lanny Crossing, then Tyrell Crossing, and then I'd like a top three, or at least
I think it's Lannister, Tyrell, Greyjoy.
Really? See, I don't even consider like Greyjoy Crossing isn't a Rush.
See,
deck.
I think I think the third best Rush deck is Greyjoy. Okay. Rose.
That's reasonable as well. Yeah. It's very fast. It's a very fast deck.
Yeah.
I don't think those are Rush decks. I think those are mid-range decks that can go fast.
I mean,
okay.
I don't see the differential.
I guess.
Why don't we just take the top 2 because we can agree on those, which is Tyrell and Lannister Crossing, and we'll come back to Greyjoy Rose. I actually think that's an interesting discussion about where the overlap is, but I think we should lay out all 4 of the archetypes.
Okay.
So we'll move into control. So control to me is an archetype that tries to stall the game by controlling your opponent's threats. That can be renowned bodies, or that can just be really good efficient bodies, like someone like Robb Stark or Tyrion, that are just good or are good bodies. Controlling them either through Kneel or through removing them from the board, through Valor or from kill spells, and over time to run your opponent out of threats. So make sure that, you know, all Rob is just dead and not coming back, that Catelyn is dead and not coming back, and all, and until the point in which either A, they just cry and collapse into a puddle, oh my god, this game has gone on a million plots, or you use some sort of closer in the form of a renowned body like the new Viper that I guess he's not the new anymore, but the Viper that prevents your opponent from defending when there's only single icons, or Doran's Game, or just some other way of gaining power quickly, or just it comes time and you've got more power. So a control deck just grinds the game, runs your opponent out of threats, either in through kill spells like Tears of Lyss, or through plots like Valor to just run your opponent out of threats, drag the game on as long as possible, because you know that your deck's long-term value is going to outvalue your opponent.
So, yeah. Control's the only archetype I think I like.
Okay.
Control's definitely my favorite.
Go ahead.
I mean,
I've got a question.
No, Will, please.
For you guys. I'm curious where you guys stand on this particular thing. Because, again, I'm looking at potential kind of sub-classifications. And I, for one, would argue that Choke falls under this category. It feels a little combo-y because I'm needing to assemble some pieces to try and deprive my opponent of those resources. But my goal is to deprive...
So wait.
Go ahead.
So here's my one argument with the whole thing, is that I think control and attrition...
Here's where I disagree. I think attrition is a subset of control. Agreed. This is actually something I spent like 2 showers, which is when I do most of my thinking about white book episodes, trying to like puzzle out. But I think attrition and stall are both subsets of control, because they share in many ways like a fundamental similarity, which is extend the game, control or run your opponent out of threats, and then use your win condition, which could be the wall. It could be just your opponent doesn't have any good cards anymore and you just win challenges unopposed. But I think that they all fundamentally share that strategy. So like Martell Wolf and Builders, while they're radically different decks and they can answer each other in different ways, they are within the same broader archetype of controlling the
game. Yeah, I agree entirely there with you, Roy. They're basically working off of the same skeleton. They're just covered in, you know, radically different organs and such, shall we say.
No, I mean, like, the wall isn't a control deck. The wall isn't an anything deck. Like, it's literally a do-nothing deck. Like, control has
it
to...
It has to thing. Answer the opponent's wall, threats. The questions your opponent presents, be that stealth characters or whatever, resets, whatever it may be, you are focused on answering that to make sure that your game plan advances. That's control.
That's not how I play control at all. Because that's totally not how I play Martell Control.
You don't answer your opponent's threats with Martell Control. No.
Sure, but that's not my main goal.
What would you describe your main goal with a control deck?
It's not to answer their threats. It's to disrupt whatever they want to do so that I can do what I want to do.
That's the same thing.
It's not answer, because I don't want to answer what they're doing. I don't actually care what they're doing. I just want to make them do something slightly different. Like,
but so, you're saying two reactive statements.
I guess my kind of control.
I'm gonna say something slightly unpopular here. I think it's a. I think the problem when we go this broad, and one of the arguments that I when I was arguing with myself about coming up with this, is that like people don't like thinking about Builders and thinking about Martell Wolf as relatively similar decks, because it cuts against the biases, because one does require, I think, a lot more effort. You could say a lot more cards, a lot more different strategies to disrupt. Hold on, let me finish. Disrupt your opponent's strategies, but they are fundamentally doing the same thing, which is answering your opponent's threats, forcing them to play the game in a way that is not their primary way of playing it, in a way that plays into your advantages. In the case of Builders, it means that they can't do challenges, so you can just consistently get your wall off and win. For Martell Wolf, it means that gives you an opportunity to do the horrible things that either Wolf cards or Martell cards can do to you. So
but Builders to me, like, feels like playing it much more like Lanny Dragon. like it feels less like Control and more like something like Lanny Dragon.
Something
which isn't Control at all.
Mid-range?
Like that feels more like
get the mid-range.
It feels more mid-range. It feels more mid-rangey to me in that you're just like, all right, I've got this game, like I got this game plan. I'm just doing stuff, and I'm not like I'm concerned about what my opponent does, but only in so much as it disrupts my game plan. Like I'm more concerned with with builders, I'm only concerned about my game plan. And, like, I'm only concerned about my opponent insofar as they can disrupt
my
game.
So you're concerned about answering any questions.
Answering any questions, but I'm only concerned with my game plan. In Martell Wolf, I'm not so much, it's not my game plan that's the concern. It's their game plan that's the concern. Like, my game plan is to play whatever they play. Whereas I don't think that's true. Like, my concern is definitely to do whatever I want in either that Lanny Dragon build, and I only care about what you play insofar as it can mess with what I'm trying to do. Did you play something that can stop Miri? That's a concern. Did you play something that can ignore my character strength? That's a concern. If not, then I don't really give a shit what you do. I'm going to just do what I do. Whereas in Martell Wolf, literally everything you do requires a response.
You're just talking economy of scale here, so to speak, right? You're just saying that one deck has more particular things it cares about than the other. Not that they have different goals, just the amount.
No, it's which side of the board I care.
I mean, and maybe I'll always admit to being a bad player in any archetype, but I think you're fundamentally reading builders wrong. To me, when I got good at builders is when I cared most about my opponents, what my opponent is doing, and planning out how what I'm going to do is specifically going to answer their threats, either through my knowledge of the matchup or my knowledge of the board state. And the wall provides me with a clear win condition. But at the end of the day, I only won big games when I was playing builders, when I was controlling what my opponent did. Because builders has access to the single most powerful control card in the game, which is Kraven. Like, Kraven fundamentally disrupts your opponent's very way of playing Thrones at its most basic way that Eric Lang laid it out, which is turning a card sideways and attacking your opponent. All right?
I don't think Kraven's the most powerful control plot.
I think it is.
The game, but
it's one gold, and it basically says so many cards in the game can't do their primary function. And then when you combine with a variety of other control cards, like Milk and other things like that, you really can just control the...
I mean, for the Magic fans in the audience, it's the closest thing we have to a Path to Exile.
Yeah, I think the most powerful control card in the game is probably Greg's, but that's only in combination with other things.
It's an enabler.
It's a control tool.
I'm not sure I would say
it's a control card. It's an
engine, which is, I think, something...
No, it's not the card advantage. That's not true. That's not what it's used for.
What?
It's not. It's also an economy. That's not what it...
possibly as well.
It specifically depowers aggro, right?
It definitely somewhat devalues the military.
Because it says it devalues your aggro, it devalues your intrigue.
But those are both card advantage aspects, though.
Which,
intrigue challenges,
but it devalues
some extent,
that card
military are about exerting a kind of depressive factor on your opponent's
exactly,
cards.
It's devaluing that. Right.
So it's devaluing the card advantage card.
Fleabottom.
I think the thing that separates where Will and I are here and where you and I are here is I think Fleabottom is fundamentally an enabler that enables a variety of different play styles, some control, some aggro, some rush, but not itself.
I just think the variations with control allow Fleabottom to be better with it, but I don't think it's just a control card.
But I think fundamentally
Fleabottom's busted in Rush.
I think you think Fleabottom's busted in Rush?
Have you not, or Tyrell?
Greyjoy?
Where you can just chuck, you can just get the Informer going if your hand is poorer, or in values, you pulled my Informer, okay, I pay one gold, I get a challenge. There's a whole variety of things. It's super strong in Tyrell Rush, Fleabottom. And with the stealth girl, the Wilding Scout, or guy, the stealth guy, Wilding Scout, that's how that whole the new DC deck.
Does Wildlink got a guy?
Oh,
like that's the best Tyrell Rush deck.
Okay,
I mean Booker made an anti combo deck. Like, there's a variety of using that shell that the DC guys came up with. You can build a variety of Rush decks that center around abusing Flea Bottom. The deck can win without Flea Bottom, which is why it's not a combo deck. But it Flea Bottom provides consistency and smooths out a variety of bad matchups and gives you an additional sort of card advantage. Which is why I think I agree with Will that it's a card advantage engine and an enabler for a variety of different play styles.
Well said.
Fair.
Jesse, sort of before we kind of think about what the control decks are, do you have anything, because you've been the most quiet in our one-sided discussion here?
No, you're good. Like, I really like control personally. So, like, I think my feelings on a lot of it go more towards Glazer's side of it, except that... except about where he was like, but I mean, I agree with everything that's said. I've just been quiet because everyone whatever I've wanted to say has already been
Jesse,
said,
why don't you then offer us, what is the example to you of a platonic ideal of a control deck that our listeners would want to play? Nightswatch Wolf. Cool.
Ooh.
Nightswatch Wolf. Like not the rat hook nonsense. Like if we're like, here's the thing. If we're putting attrition and control together, like, my favorite control deck of all time is Night's Watch Wolf. Like, the recruiting.
Yeah.
Like controlling a board state. Like, and the HRD Clansman. Like, constantly controlling the board state, just not allowing you to have things out. Like, that's why I'm so fond of big Arianne versus small Arianne. Just because, like, I like things that just, like, keep the board really, really tight.
I agree so much with everything Jesse just said. That's why we work well together.
There you go.
If that makes sense. Yeah, so.
I think Strip Club.
Skyfall?
Yes. I love that deck.
I think I like Scott's version better right now. Scott's got a nasty version. But, like, it's the same exact concept. But, like, that Strip Club concept, I think, is, like, basically the platonic ideal of control. Burn,
I think,
burn
that,
under control. Yeah, right,
because that, I mean, that would be my
well I mean this is one of the things that
burn. But I don't
the question is whether burn is a mid-range or a control strategy, which I had burn originally as a separate archetype, but that was as a unique to Thrones. But
so
the way in which burn works, there's obviously burn decks in Hearthstone or Magic, but those are
active.
but burn, the way burn works in Thrones over other decks is different. Other decks, other games.
So I think it depends. I think the old ones, the old Danny burn is mostly mid range, and I think new Danny burn is much more control.
That's fair. The difference in this versus Hearthstone or Magic with burn is, like, burn and Thrones is much more linear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's only a few different options you have. Yeah. I mean, now we have, like, four options, right? Five.
Thinking about linear.
Pasa. Man, we got like
part,
a million.
Part of the issue in the difference is targeting, right? Burn in other games like Magic or Hearthstone can go straight to the dome, as they say, right? It can be directly converted to damage in most cases against the other person's total. In Thrones, you don't have Drakkaris that says give a character -4 and kill it if it's 0 or gain 4 power. Like, so it is divorced from the win condition in a way it is not in other
games. Thank God.
Yeah.
So you need to either control or then end up going aggro.
Yeah. So do we are we sort of talked out with control here?
Well, we got to list a couple of best control decks.
So,
right?
I mean, builders to me, using my definition, and then Martell Wolf.
Now builders.
Think about control.
Are we going
talking
right
about
now?
We were talking about the best. Like, we wanted to do the best. What,
like,
are the
right now?
Best
the second. Deck?
Yeah, right
so,
now.
All
right,
Martell
second.
Wolf. Then.
No.
Martell. Martell. So two versions of Martell Wolf. So, like, the big Arianne Martell Wolf is very good, and also little Arianne with Arya is really good.
Like, I think Martell Starfall, but I don't think either of those are good as Targ to Come.
I'm in for
Yeah, that's my pick.
Targ Wars to Come is probably
and then
Interesting.
Probably Martell, then, but maybe Starfall. Depends on how much Greyjoy is around.
I think we're also missing one other one. Martell Stag, which has two versions. There's the hand destruction version. I do think the passive power version is still good.
It's at least a good example for people to think about.
I think Barra HRD is better. But
yeah.
I think Barra HRD is super underrated. I think that deck is still very good.
I think the deck is good in specific metas. Yeah.
I don't think it's as good as either Targ or the best Martell decks, though.
Danny going to buy cards truly hurts
Danny. Well, it's also, I think, a combo meta is really bad for that deck.
I mean,
so
sure. Yes, well,
Danny
I agree
is the single
you.
Best integer combo we have.
If a Martell,
you see Danny in like three events, and it's like, hey, good luck.
Yeah, Danny. That's one of the reasons why Targ Wars to Come is probably the best control deck. It's one of the best and most consistent answers to burn, or not burn. Excuse me, to combo burn is. But I think in a Martell meta, which we all predicted, excluding combo, that Barra list that Jesse said is very powerful. Because it has strong answers to decks that rely on locations. And I think another thing that's important in Thrones is plots. Like, control plots are really central to the way in which control decks work. This can be Political Disaster. Right. This can be March to the Wall. This can be Valor Morghulis or Valor Dohaeris. Just the fact, like, the way in which plots work make control decks in Thrones very, very different and much more, I think, consistent than they are in other card games.
I would agree with
lower
that.
It makes them run lower cost too, usually.
Yes. On-demand reset is a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of people just don't like control decks, because Valor Morghulis is a feel-bad card for certain archetypes, like Rush.
A great card for everything I like. Hey, I have a side question. It's the Scott question, but since we're talking about control, I think the game is a better place if we have more cards that have tech similar to New Aria. What does the rest of the cast think?
Cannot be saved?
Ooh.
Yeah. Some kind of something like Cannot Be Saved. And we don't need 15, but more than one. Like
absolutely.
Three or four.
Yeah. If
I love cards like that. Like I was playing a game online last night and I knew they were gonna valid me, so then I felt the accusation there. That's good. That's hilarious. But no, I think the new Aria is interesting. I like her.
Cannot be
I think she's good for the game.
But do you want more cards with a similar effect, Jesse?
Yeah.
If they're
put them
printed
in
Stark or Barra, then yes.
Give different outs to them.
Lanny.
No, Lanny should not get Lanny should not get Cannot Be Saved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lanny should not get a Cannot Be Saved. Can you get over your PTSD about them now? They're not good at anything that would suggest Cannot Be Saved is useful.
I'm...
You played nothing but Tyrell lately, and Tyrell is a worse version of what Lannister ever was. I don't get it.
So my point about Tyrell is Tyrell is a sleeping giant. Not Tyrell, excuse me. Tyrell was once a sleeping giant. It just needed a couple of cards to push it into really, I think, unfortunate places. Lannister's the same way. Like, those amazing Lannister cards are still there, and they just...
What amazing Lannister cards?
Okay, but we're never going to agree about this, Glazer, but...
There's just, like, they were amazing cards in a core set meta. They're just not that good anymore.
Tywin, Tyrion are still good cards.
Tywin...
They are.
They're good cards. They're not great cards. There's been better cards in Tyrell.
I agree. The 5-cost Tywin and the 7-cost Tyrion are both
all right,
really
there's
good.
The
Jesse
yeah, I don't think... I don't,
but I think we should move on. Like, we're just going to get into the same...
Wait, hang on. I don't think Tywin's a top 10 7-coster in the game right now.
Top 10.
Top 10?
Top 10. Oh.
Are we doing a sidebar top 10
7? No. That's a whole topic for another episode. We're
right now. So wait, ready? The two in Tyrell, big Cersei, big Arianne, big Viper. We're at 5 already. Big Dany, we're at 6. 3 in Greyjoy?
You're not selling me on Big Viper.
You're not
either.
Selling me on Big
Combo exists, but deal with it's it. Not the card itself. It's the cards around it that make Viper good. He doesn't.
Sure,
he's not good
like
in the back.
The combo.
All the other cards.
Yeah, the combo doesn't work.
All the
right.
Tywin. Tywin's
sure,
always
the,
impactful okay, when he hits the board.
So the
New
three,
Viper, like Big
oh,
Viper is not.
Okay. I'm never scared.
Okay,
unless
fine.
It's a Hyper
three,
Viper deck, I'm never scared of Big Viper.
We're at the 3 in Greyjoy now. Yes, so we're at 8, not counting Viper.
Tywin.
Good.
John.
three Great Dracer.
He wants Dagmar.
Four and Great Dracer. Dagmar.
No.
Dagmar goes there. Right, Dagmar's so definitely better. Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah,
then
so
HRD four. Is everywhere then, right now. Dagmar's
oh, and big, yeah, Jon Snow. We're at 10. Congratulations. Tywin is at best the 11th best 7th.
Well, thanks.
I'm not totally not sure that Tywin hurts. Is better than Gregor.
Tywin is better than Gregor. Sorry, icons.
Well, he's...
No, but...
No,
he's not my hyper Gregor deck.
I mean, look, like if you're... yeah. Like, Gregor's really good.
As we say...
Tywin is better than you're saying he is.
Good, he's still on the top 10 7 costs.
As we say at work, Glazer, we can take the conversation about the differences between the way Tyrell plays currently and Lannister plays offline, and I can tell you why I prefer the Tyrell playstyle to the Lannister playstyle. But let's move on to mid-range. Are we ready for mid-range? Speaking of Lannister, so that brings us to our third archetype, which is mid-range, which we probably should have started with because this is the like on-the-box way of playing Thrones, which is that you build your deck in a way that you have a cost curve that's generally spread from the cheapest characters to the most expensive characters, and you try to spread your threats and consistently play single generally good cards or several singly generally good cards every turn. And you just rely on those good cards, which may or may not have specific synergies, but generally are just good, efficient cards with good, efficient bodies and good, efficient stats to win challenges, occasionally using events or locations to supplement winning those challenges to win the game. This could be winning the game a variety of ways. It could be winning for renown. It could be winning just 15 power challenges. It could be getting your opponent's hand clear while winning a few power challenges. It's just a variety of ways. Mid-range is turn a card sideways, win a challenge, move on to the next challenge, defend a challenge. It's a very you play a body, you win challenges kind of game. It's the most quote honest way to play, quote unquote, honest way to play Thrones. It's the on the box way of playing. It's the default way of playing. It's a building a deck that again runs characters throughout the Yes, it's often the most
I would
thematic.
Argue it's the most thematic way, the way that second edition was kind of sold to us, right? Like that they reworked things from first edition, like this cost curve, to encourage this type of like and little tussling back and forth until you land your haymaker Tywin on turn, you know, four right. or whatever. And
I want to supplement this with one state.
Only one house plays that way right now.
With Stark, but I want to.
Oh, Greyjoy.
Oh, Greyjoy too. But I want to supplement this one with one thing. Like control decks generally favor cards lower down the card the cost curve, while rush decks tend to favor cards higher in the car in the cost curve. Mid range decks rely on the fact that their deck is spread throughout that cost curve, and they have a variety of threats that may not have one specific strategy. But
unless you're Greyjoy,
but Greyjoy has a lot of flexible strategies that it does with those people. But like to me,
it's 4-7 costers and a 6 coster.
Yes, and I
fucking make the house go.
I definitely agree, but I think to me the platonic ideal of a mid range deck is Stark fealty, like traditional Stark fealty. Like that may not be the best, but that is like what mid range as an archetype in second edition.
I think traditional Stark fealty in second edition isn't a mid range deck at all. It's your style of control deck. Like, completely. I think you're totally off base. I don't think it's even a bit range deck. I think it's a control deck. The no fun, the like traditional original no fun with Winterfell and Cat and stuff. That's control. Like, that's control without a big card pool.
Maybe.
I could kind of see that argument, actually.
I can see it, but I'm unconvinced.
Yeah.
It's control if it's played correctly, but for a large majority of it wasn't. It was used as a rush archetype.
You would stall out by playing no fun, and then you would be like, closed! Gotcha.
I'm really glad you mentioned
that. Sounds more mid-rangey than...
Because tempo is the fundamental thing that mid-range is about, right? It's constantly staying ahead on tempo, and a lot of mid-range decks, and Greyjoy Reigns is the ultimate example of this. Like, when Greyjoy Reigns loses tempo, it loses the game. And control decks, they...
Is that true?
I think so. That's when every time I beat a Greyjoy deck, you just run it out of tempo through Valador Harris, through Neil.
You play different types of decks than I do. I don't think that's it. Like, because like sometimes you run out of tempo and it just top decks a big dude and it's like, haha, gotcha.
Maybe.
So finish your thought, Roy. Finish your thought.
So what I'm saying is, like, a control decks can generally give up tempo in the short term to gain a long-term tempo advantage. Like, you force your opponent to extend, and then you Valor them. So you've lost, say, two plots worth of tempo, but you gain a huge amount in the third turn by that Valor. Rush decks generally don't care about tempo per se. They want to just get Renown. And of course, combo decks, look at the first turn of most combo decks. They could not get, pardon my French, Will, I'm sorry, about tempo. They simply just care about getting their pieces. But mid-range strategies rely 100% on maintaining positive tempo and positive card advantage towards themselves.
Yeah,
Control is the same way, though. Control needs tempo.
Here maybe sometimes, is a connected thought.
It's just slightly behind instead of slightly ahead.
If I can draw it back to Magic again, as much as Aaron may hate this, I've been considering getting back into Modern again, thanks to Dominaria piquing my interest in Magic. But anyway, so I've been doing a lot reading on stuff, right? So I've been reading about some deck primers and things on, like, Abzan or Junk mid-range. And I read a description over there that really intrigued me for this concept, which is that in most decks, their cards, the power level when they draw any single card for that kind of, you know, situation, to call this back to our chapter pack reviews, right? That the power level on that card might be anywhere from a C to an A, depending on, you know, the board state at the time. But your goal in these mid-range decks is to build in such a way that all of your cards are always B pluses, no matter what. And you keep up that consistent edge kind of in that tempo game where your draws are not dead, they're a little up above the curve, and you just keep kind of building up over that hump into the late game, where your higher consistent average angles them out.
I think what you just described is good stuff decks.
Kind of.
And I don't think good stuff decks have to be that mid-range.
I think most good stuff decks are mid-range decks, though.
Sure, but, like, control decks are also good stuff decks.
Ooh, I think
a rush deck just wants a top deck.
So, yeah. Like, what is...
He's going to say
control. What is Baradom? What is Baradom?
Baradom is control by me.
Right? Because, like, Heather, you're running... Okay, so because you're running Stannis, you're running Big Mel, like, so, like, you're locking the board down. So it is it control, to, but yeah. Is it not at the same time mid-range?
I mean, I'm not saying that a control deck never does challenges. I feel like the control decks aren't necessarily focused. Their win condition, their primary goal... not to win challenges. They're doing a variety of other strategies, and hey, look, I have the opportunity to win an intrigue challenge and draw a card with Big Melisandre. Like, that's great. But you don't need to do that to win the game. And in many ways, you're more worried about... And until you don't need it to win the game in the short term, I guess you could say. Like, you have a variety of other strategies that you execute, and then winning a few challenges to supplement those strategies is what you're going to do. While mid-range decks primarily about winning challenges, and then maybe use other strategies to supplement them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're trying to say for mid-range is grind them out.
Not necessarily grind them out. It's just simply like, I want to try to win 2 to 3 challenges consistently every single turn. And I want those challenges to generally gain me power or do something that impacts the board in a tempo way for me. That I'm constantly maintain positive tempo.
More getting over the hump rather than grinding them out. I think grinding them out puts it more into control territory.
No, I think what you guys are describing, like what you guys are describing is the classic DC archetype, and I think you're fundamentally misunderstanding it. Like, it's about maintaining very small advantages, but, like, that can be through challenges, or that can just be through, like, anything, but, like, it's that very small, consistent advantage that you grind them out with.
Here's the thing. I mean, here's the thing, Aaron. I think you are fundamentally misunderstanding the differences between first edition and second edition. I think mid-range in general was a much, much weaker and less present archetype, or it may not even have existed in first edition, but in second edition, in second edition, that like because of the way the game was designed, I think it was, and that the DC grind out these small advantages is mid-strength. Like, look at the decks that like DC brought for a good long time. Lanny Reigns is in many ways a platonic ideal of a mid-range deck. It plays cards throughout.
Exactly, but I think you're fundamentally misunderstanding how that worked and how that's the exact same deck as Grand Theft Location, which is the exact same deck as like all of like the Lanny Dark Wings. Those are like those decks are doing the exact same thing.
I don't know
thing.
If Lanny Dark Wings was a mid-range. I honestly have not thought enough about Lanny Reigns at this point. Or not Lanny Reigns, excuse me. Death Lanny Wings. Wings.
But like Lanny Reigns, like those are all decks that are fundamentally doing the same thing. They're saying like those are all fundamentally decks that saying I'm playing B plus cards, I'm top decking the right card because every card can be the right card. I want to minimize the ability for me to draw wrong and have that affect the game. And I just want to continue to play efficient shit and figure out how to turn it sideways to win. And
honestly, like, goodness though, are we actually disagreeing at all, or are we just putting emphasis on different points of what we're saying here?
I think that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think we want to find I think we run into this situation, and this is, I think, just a classic problem throughout this conversation, is some of us like certain archetypes over others, and we want to put emphasis on the things we like about archetypes or dislike about archetypes and emphasize those. And I include myself in this as well. And I think we're both right here, Glazer. I think overall what you're saying is, and I actually think Will really hit it on the head, which is that you want all the cards in a mid-range deck wants all the cards in its deck to be B plus cards so that you are always top decking something that gives you an answer, which is why you generally want to avoid specific synergies because specific synergies require you to have specific cards.
It's so weird that Sam comes from DC, right? Because that's the exact opposite of how he plays.
Well, but Sam doesn't come from
Sam doesn't come from DC.
Sam comes from the DC meta.
No, he doesn't though.
Kid does. He doesn't. Right.
But Kid didn't learn how to play from Sam. I mean, like, Sam didn't learn how to play from Kid.
Yeah, but does he ever play the game? Yeah,
I mean, here's the thing we have to understand. Like, Sam's just a good card player, and Sam won his card design because Corey, through Kid, gave him a good deck.
First card design.
And then, like, all of Sam's subsequent success is Sam. Like, I mean, he worked with Corey, he worked with all these other people, but...
No, I get that, but it's just strange that the single player who most is the opposite of that theory we just crafted started playing, became known, won his very first Thrones tournament, which was Worlds, by playing the exact opposite of the style he's become.
Everybody doesn't always play the same thing all the time.
Because that's not how he builds at all. That's not how he plays. Yeah, but Sam basically does. He takes a bunch of little synergies he really likes and starts putting them together until he finds a deck.
I think Sam's just a really good card player and he likes to punish people. But he likes good, clean thrones.
Yeah. But let's not forget, Sam almost played Hyper Viper at Worlds, so.
He didn't.
I know.
He did not.
I feel like almost is very, like, subjective in this case.
But,
I don't know that, like, Sam's just a nice guy. Like, when people were talking to him, like, I'm sure Sam was just like, I mean, like, even when I was talking to him, he was like, oh, maybe. You know, like, Sam's just too nice to be like, I would never play that.
I mean, but
Sam thinks combo is bad for the game. Like,
he does.
Anytime it's brought up, like, in the chat, the WhatsApp chat or anything, like, he's always like, I just wish people liked to play good, clean thrones.
Yeah, I don't think good stuff isn't good, clean thrones. I just also don't think it's a deck I could ever imagine him bringing ever again.
A mid-range deck?
Right.
I don't think he would either, but that's just because mid-range decks are, generally speaking, like the least interesting decks in a big speaking deck building sense to build. Like, you can gain small advantages by tweaking mid-range decks, but like, from an overall deck building perspective, like, mid-range decks are the least interesting.
Like you said, it's all the B plus.
Right.
I think everything but combo is ultimately good, clean thrones. And you're underselling mid-range decks. Good mid-range is really hard to make. But I think everything but combo is technically good.
I mean, I agree thrones. Too.
And combo isn't dirty thrones. It's just Dry Thrones. I think Dry Thrones.
All right. So,
like, yeah.
So why don't we just give a few examples before we move on to combo or combination decks? So the best mid-range deck currently in the meta is Greyjoy Reigns, right?
Greyjoy Wars to Come. Greyjoy Wars to Come is better than Greyjoy Reigns.
Yeah. And then Tyrell Reigns, probably.
Tyrell Reigns. Lannister Reigns is the platonic ideal. Not saying it's the best one, but it's probably the platonic ideal of a mid-range deck, along with Lanny Dragon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, historically. But, like, I don't think they're either one of those are decks that actually
that's
matter
correct.
Anymore.
Again, that's why I was saying, like, ideal types.
Hey, what deck type is the Direwolves?
Which one?
The Bratz. It's a control Rings. Deck.
The Bratz.
Control.
It's a control, control. Deck.
Yeah, okay.
The Bratz Puppies is a control deck. The combo killer. All right, so we ready to go on to combination? So combo decks are the most popular archetype in Thrones. Everyone loves it. So this is sort of, it has a lot in common with Rush, because Rush is fundamentally about getting to 15 power as fast as possible. But while Rush decks rely on sort of the general sense of the keyword renown, and that you can gain power through framework actions, combo is specifically about finding broken interactions that gain you power as fast as possible. Or I guess they can also mill your opponent down to zero cards. We haven't gotten to that kind of combo yet, but we could theoretically get to that. So it's finding a way to get to the one of the two win conditions in the game as rapidly as possible, or the third, which is just getting your opponent to stop playing the game in the middle of it. So of those three...
Conceivably, I would think...
So you're saying that Builders is combo.
Builders is combo. It's about finding...
That's where the one phase... To me.
Yes, it's generally about pulling the specific synergies off in a single round. So Tyrell Lion, the variety of it, but the one that Platt won, was specifically about getting, or Hyper Viper is specifically about getting its combo turn, playing all these synergistic cards, and winning the game in that one turn. You can be at zero power starting at Marshalling, and then be at 15 or sometimes higher if you just keep counting the power you gained by the end of that round. But combo, what separates it from Rush is combo is about finding specific synergies between cards and interactions that you then
OTKs
to use the magic and Thrones. So you don't technically kill your opponent unless you actually kill them Frey style and Thrones. So.
So, yeah. So Drowned God is or isn't combo?
It's not.
Really? I think I've been considered combo.
You cannot get to 15 power in one turn.
Okay. I don't love this definition of combo, but okay.
Well, I said generally.
It's probably in kind of an awkward spot.
Yeah, no, I feel like a lot of what you guys consider control, I feel like, has heavy combo elements at the very least under these definitions. And, like, I would just classify that as combo at that point, because the combo is one point that maybe the control
That's true,
pieces.
Aaron, but, like, literally all card games rely on combos. Like, Jon Snow and Rob are a combo.
Yeah,
like,
no, I get
but
that.
Is that a combo deck? Is the Stark Fealty deck that runs those two cards a combo deck?
No, I think combo requires a level of non-interaction from opponent.
Yes. Hence,
and there's interaction between Jon Snow. Like, you have to challenge, you have to do things with them. Like, you don't plop them on the board and they go, "We win." Like, if you don't do anything, we win. Like, there still has to be a lot of other stuff that happens. Like, they're not claiming win condition in and of themselves. Well. Rob is to an extent, but that's him actually winning challenges, which Jon Snow doesn't necessarily make him do.
It helps though. Combinate
like you plop Mace down. You plop Mace down, and if your opponent doesn't do anything, you win.
Yes.
You plop the wall down, and your opponent doesn't do anything. You win. You plop the ladies down, and your opponent doesn't do anything. You win. You plop. What's the other one? I had one more. Drown God shit down, and like your opponent doesn't. Do anything.
I think you forward. Have to. You right. have to rank them.
Like that to me. Sure. There's degrees, right? Like, I don't think this is all the same thing. I don't think they're all horrible evilness, but I think that these are ultimately all combo.
I think what you're saying is there are combinations, there are combos throughout the card pool. I think a combo deck is a deck that finds these interactions and pushes them to an extreme in which, to draw from your point, reduces your opponent's interaction to close to zero. And thus you generally win mm-hmm. in a single turn. But you don't always win in a
single turn. Yeah, I think the single
turn. But you often do. All right. So, but.
See, yeah, I don't think it has to be a single turn for it to be combo, is the difference.
Maybe.
I don't think the OTK, whatever, is what the definition of. Like, I think that's a one. That's a different. That's a type of combo deck.
I think that. I think all combo is. I think it's only specifically like that way because how big of a deal combo has been in second edition in the last year.
Right.
Like.
Right. So, but like that's a specific type of combo deck. Combo is still absolutely. Like any of those other situations.
Yeah, the wall is technically.
I don't
a combo
see, deck. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's why I don't think the wall should be pulled out of the control category, which is because. Despite what people constantly say, having played the wall consistently for a year and a half, there are massive levels of interaction between the wall and your opponent. Like,
no, that's not true. What there are massive levels of interaction with are challenges, and that the wall is affected by them is totally incidental.
No, it's not. It's literally on the card.
It's integral.
The card doesn't say claim to power. It's not. It's at the end of the challenge phase. Kneel this claim to power. It's if you have not won an unopposed challenge.
It functionally does. Like everything else is extra, right? Like there's conditions to like the combos. Every combo has conditions. It doesn't say like all men are fools. Doesn't say at the end of the have a bunch of ladies. Claim
That's literally what it says. Power.
No, it
Let
is.
Let me read
not.
All men are fools to you. Thrones DB.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it up. Thrones DB. All men are fools. All
oh
right.
My God. Hurry up.
After you win a challenge by five or more strength, each lady character you control gains one power. So hey. That says win a challenge by five or more, each lady character you control gains a power. Uh-huh. So that means if you have 15 ladies in play, you just win one challenge. And you do this. The wall cannot win the game unless you're at 13 power in a single turn. It cannot OTK.
Again, you're very specified on the single turn. The single turn is not the point. The point is that, like, it's a very specific thing you have to do. And, like, it's basically just like, all right, unless your opponent stops this one very specific thing, you're gaining power. And, like, whether that happens over one turn or not, it's still a combo. Like, once I set up that combo...
I literally agree. All right, Aaron, but here's the problem. The reason why I refuse to accept your definition of combo decks is because literally there are combos throughout the card pool that are saying that have that level of interaction. And if we start saying that anything that relies on two cards working together to win the game or for your game plan, then almost every single deck is a combo deck.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's a straw man.
What you're doing is a straw man.
I'm saying that... No, any cards that work together. No, you're just doing it. All right. Any cards that work together and literally like are just like you now have power to and win are functionally you're building toward a combo. All you're doing is building toward a state where that card.
I mean,
wins the game.
Then Miri Mazder is a combo card.
No. Because she doesn't do anything to win you the game. She kills things and then you need to do a bunch of other shit to win the game. Her in and of herself is not winning you the game.
All right. I don't believe that this conversation is going any further.
Like, if you play Miri and I play nothing.
She's going to win the game because she'll do a power challenge and then you get one power. Then next turn you
play. Right. But that's just literally any character, right? Like, okay, great. But, like, if I just defend her every turn, I win Dom. You keep killing my characters with Miri. The game is not won. I would actually win the game. I would beat you. Like, Miri, like if I play the wall and you play nothing, I'm winning the game. Or if I play the wall, you play one character, I need exactly one card to get my combo going. And my combo is then winning me the game.
So if you play Chamber, like, and I don't play anything, you get two power a turn.
I think the Dom package is a combo. I think the wall package is a combo. I think most passive power, probably not all, I'd have to really think it through. I think most passive power is a combo. You set up the combo and then say, we're not interacting. I'm not worried about anything. I'm winning this.
I think, again, I'm going to go back.
Not, whatchamacallit, that stupid, not, uh, What's the Martell one where you have to lose challenges? Not a combo. The others are functionally passive power.
So I want to exit this conversation because I don't believe you and I are doing anything productive other than annoying each other. But I think that it's about combo decks. What create them as a separate archetype is the level of interaction. When the goal of a deck is to reduce your opponent's level of interaction with the specific synergies of your deck to close to zero, then it becomes a combo deck. Other archetypes can use combos to win them the game, but the level of interaction is much higher than Hyper Viper, Drown God, Ladies sure. Combo.
So I feel like the goal of all of these,
why is Drown God a combo?
Because the goal is to reduce your opponent's level of interaction to zero, which I think is what the wall doesn't ever fully succeed. But like cards like your favorite control card, Kraven's goal is to reduce interaction to zero. The whole point of that deck is to say you cannot do anything.
So wait, explain to me how Dragon God is combo, because that doesn't make sense.
Reduce interaction to zero is the goal.
Well, you can do whatever you want. I'm not reducing any interaction. I'm allowing you to do any challenge you want. It doesn't bother me.
See what I mean?
I'm not reducing
that
anything
you're
doing. That
may be Ward Aaron's argument in that
it's, yes, you, but don't you don't care that, about
it. So, you know what? Actually, I've completely taken the wrong tack here. The problem here is that the place of combo...
Is that
what?
Like
I do love the wall. You know I love the wall. No, I'm actually getting around to it. The problem is combo as an archetype in the game and in the community that we're all part of is a very stigmatized archetype. And thus, none of us want our preferred playstyles to be listed under combo because then we become bad people.
We are anathema.
We become a variety.
No, I don't care about combo.
I don't think the wall is unethical or bad. I just think it's a combo. Like, I don't think Drown God is unethical or bad. I just think it's a combo. Like, I don't think combo is inherently bad. I think OTK combo is inherently bad and a problem.
Yes. I think that's what is being referred to.
Right. But we're talking about archetypes. We're not talking about problem decks. If that would be a different conversation. I think both the wall and Drown God and Dom and to a lesser extent, but still to an extent, mace decks
are almost certainly
combo decks. I don't think they're so I don't think those are degenerate combo necessarily. I don't think those are one hit problem combos that necessarily need to be restricted into Oblivion or anything. But I do think those are not control decks. Those are combo decks.
I agree with you.
Here's where I disagree with you. I don't think that. The problem is, I agree with you that combo is not an archetype that should be bad, eliminated, whatever. But I think that it's only a separate archetype from the variety of other ones when it reaches the level of, to use the term easily, degeneracy. When it just simply becomes about only executing those synergies. Then it becomes a separate archetype from control, because then Rush is a combo.
I mean, that's sort of the argument I made earlier.
No.
I don't even care that I have played it before.
I don't think so. I mean, Rush is closer to a combo deck, Will. I agree that it is closer to a combo deck. But think about win condition, right? Like, because a lot of it comes down to that. Combo is where the combo of cards wins, not... Like, the combo of cards does something almost independent of what you and your opponent do.
Well, you mean what your opponent does, because you're literally always playing the cards.
What your opponent does. I mean, right, sort of.
I'm going to give my uninhibited 2 cents really quick because here's the thing. I've played combo before. I played combo at Worlds. I was one of the biggest proponents of combo in the game for a long time. I was wrong. I can admit when I'm wrong. It's bad for the game. If you play it, you're a scumbag. I will tell you that. I have several friends who have played it and won with it recently, but I think it's actively bad for the community. And I just don't think it's good for the game. And I think that the game should kill it.
You think the game should kill all... Wait, time out. Wait. You think...
I don't think there should be a deck that should win turn 2 without your opponent having any choice in the matter.
So specify, though. Like, right? you don't think one hit kill combo should exist in the game.
So we were yelling about combo.
We actually fell, and this is exactly what I was afraid of
when we got to combos and archetype, that we fell down into the rabbit hole of normative discussion.
I've got a Jesse question, like, because I don't want to talk about one hit kill combo. Yeah.
Sure.
Let's say there's a point where, it's never going to be a one hit kill combo. Let's say it takes 2 to 3 turns, but there's a point where we get to where Drown God cannot technically be beat because the combo of cards is going to go off every single game. Is that just wrong. Bad? I didn't say we're it's there. It's wrong. That would be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, okay. Because I feel.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get to that.
So
point.
That
I feel like we'll, we might. I don't
Danny's
know.
Danny's just
will,
a really good answer for it.
Who?
Danny and Big Arian are both really good answers.
So I feel like there may be a point. Big Arian's a really, really good answer. I feel like there's a point where you can where you.
You know what else is a really good answer? Varus.
Well, no, I don't think Varus is good at all. So what I actually do? No.
I know, but none of that. If you can continually keep getting my Tarl off the board, it's tough.
I think event plot cancel. I think that what's the political disaster? God, hey, finally didn't call it favorable. All right, political disaster. Is the real answer, because if they could just get 20 gold,
you just run dupes to your locations.
Right, but if they can get, like, if you can get set up, like, turn 2 with, like, a bajillion locations, and they can get, like, 20 gold turn 2-3, they're just gonna, like, win in marshalling.
Yeah.
They're gonna drop Tarl that turn and just be like, done. Set it up.
You have to find your drowned disciples early.
Yes, but, like, hey,
for
that
sure.
Draw event.
Like, it's not, yeah. It's not as,
look,
it's
we're
not,
not we're,
as,
we're
like,
not there yet. I don't think we're there. I feel like
I think it's a good deck. I think it's a for sure good deck.
2 or 3 more cards that draw things or that like search your deck for Drown Gods are going to be a problem. And I don't know if we're getting them.
Yeah.
But like if we do, like I don't like I feel like it's a good deck now, and like good decks that keep getting good cards
when
their combo break.
Absolutely. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't like anything that's an OTK. Like, and you know, like,
but it would
maybe
be
I was a little aggressive
like
while ago.
OTK.
and maybe it's a little weird coming from me just because I'm not usually that aggressive. I just like I talk to a lot of new players. Like, the game has definitely went from more to more community building side of it. You know, and like I think combo's bad for it. And like people can talk to me. Like I'm always open to talk about it. I'm very close with Jake Platt. I'm very close with the Thompsons. I'm very close with Alex Black. Like I'm close with Johnny. Like all my friends play combo.
I don't. That's cold.
Yeah, I love you, Glazer.
I would never
I'm
play.
I'm just saying, like. Correct.
Except the wall.
We all played the wall.
We all played
the problem
wall.
Is everybody else all played the wall. So
we did.
Our decision.
Yeah.
I find combo super interesting. I find building it interesting. I find playing it interesting. I find the experience on the other side, especially for new players, is uninteresting. And I think it has just become such a negative stigma that even though it might not be the worst thing, it is now because of all the controversy. Like, and I just want the game to take care of it. Like, just take care of it and get it out of the game. That's my 2 cents. Sorry for ranting there, Will. That is my 2 cents on the game.
That's okay. I think it is definitely a different direction or aspect of this discussion than I think we were planning on having this episode. But, you know, to each their own.
So... anyway, I think probably of all the archetypes, combo is the one that we have the least consensus on. And I think that makes a lot of sense because...
sure.
But Jesse and I agree.
No, you agree, but you don't entirely agree.
We totally
sure,
fully agree.
I
thought that,
I
like,
apologize, Glazer, for misrepresenting your point of view.
Wait, Jesse, did we not agree?
We did.
All right,
we did.
No, we totally agreed at the end.
Excuse me. I'm sorry to you, Glazer, for to Jesse,
Roy just doesn't
to agree. Will, and to the community.
You're good. You're good, Roy.
Misrepresenting Aaron's point of view and Jesse's point of view. But my point is this.
How dare you misrepresent Glazer?
My point is this. Degenerate. I think that combo is, at the very least, I should have phrased this differently, the most controversial of the archetypes. And I think that it has a lot to do with the normative things Absolutely. That are around it. But bringing it back to the general discussion, mm-hmm. I think that these are four generally good archetypes and that you should generally think about the ways in which they counter each other. So what do we think? Which archetype? I mean, Magic has the classic, mid-range, what is it? Or it's aggro, control, combo, right? As the triangle. Thrones, we now have a square. So which archetypes answer other ones, do you think?
Right. The archetypes are like you.
Well, we were saying earlier that...
I think there's so much bleed that it's really hard to dictate. Combo doesn't have an answer.
Here's where I disagree. I think combo has an answer in the form of rush. That rush can beat combo.
I was really hoping you were going to say rookery
can, but I'm excluding rookery. But I don't think rookery is actually going to be as good as an anti combo answer as people think. But
I got over rookery. It's so sad.
So I think that rush can beat combo. Like, I think Lanny Crossing has a very good chance of beating rush, and I think that Tyrell Crossing teched a certain way has an excellent chance of beating combo. So I think rush, for example, answers combo. Like, let's go back to the world's meta. I brought a combo killer deck, and it did a really great job of killing combo the one time that I faced combo. I think that very fast deck.
Combo and rush, both, a combo is in a different place and rush is not.
Correct, but I think combo can still lose to rush. It maybe not as much as it could in November, but I still think it is answered by rush. And if you are definitely afraid of combo and there's no restricted list that's going to ban it, bringing Lanny Crossing is a good way to beat it.
I think rush is a good answer to control.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think combo is a good answer to... I think control is a good answer to combo.
In the form of burn.
I don't know. So, like, are we considering combo like mace? Because I think mace is a really good answer versus control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So, that's OT, control is really good to one-hit kill combo.
Yeah. Sure.
And your slower combo, you need rush.
Yeah. And then, like, mid-range...
Mid-range should be good in literally
it loses every meta.
Yeah. Like,
that's the whole point of it.
A super challenged-based mid-range deck should generally lose to control decks.
I don't think good mid-range should be super challenge-based. That's the point of mid-range decks. They shouldn't have that weakness.
I think mid-range decks should be the most consistent.
Yeah. I think that's why Greyjoy Wars to Come is so good mid-range, because they're not that focused on challenge. They've got, like, all these different little things.
Yeah, I'll tell people, because I'll tell people tomorrow on the Wars to Come. I don't care. Like, I'm playing Greyjoy Wars to Come this weekend because, like, I just haven't had a chance to play recently, and I played, like, matchup after matchup, and, like, sure, there are answers for it, but, like, I'm just, like, consistently winning or in every single game.
Hey, can I say what kills me about Greyjoy more than anything? It's that they're the steel location house that's also the pillage house. If they had to blow up your locations every time they wanted to steal it, I would hate them so much less.
For some reason...
That it's so variance and luck-based that it happens, genuinely bothers
me. For some reason, it doesn't bother me.
Pillage is a bad keyword. I generally agree.
Pillage. It's just like
terrible.
I feel like
bust,
it should be
right?
But I meant terrible on both levels.
Well, like, no, I feel like
I think it's good.
Yeah, man. No, I think even when it's good, it's bad for the game, because like the game should generally, I think we can mostly agree, if not fully agree, be played by your hand and your board. And saying like, I haven't drawn this, I haven't played it, and like now this is like And now the entire game is swung because of literally pure luck that nothing could be done about on either side. Or I win the game because you happen to pillage the wrong thing that did nothing for you, right? Like, I don't think that benefits
pillage is definitely the most variance-heavy keyword, and the fact that there are effects in the game, particularly Euron, but other ones, that Triss. Well, particularly Euron, but Triss as well,
yeah.
That play off that, and these aren't just negligible effects. They're like powerful effects is a problem because of just the way in which pillage is just so variance heavy. But I mean, Nate wanted so, though, like this is not a Danny thing. This is like literally in the second edition rulebook. Like pillage has been part of the game since the core set, and it's something that, and the decision to make it so that when you reach zero cards, you lose, like it's a design part of the game, so it's something we're gonna have to live with,
right?
So yes, I don't think it's against the intended direction for the game. I'm not arguing that at all. I'm arguing it's a poor decision that actively does not reward player skill.
If you're saying it makes the game less competitive, then I agree with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything that allows, and I love Greyjoy, but anything that allows more variance in a skill-based game is bad competitively.
But so does intrigue challenges, and I don't have a problem with that because you have a choice to play it. You drew it, and you had all these different options.
That's a whole other discussion that I would like to get into.
Yeah,
I actually believe that intrigue challenges, you should roll a dice because it's at random.
I'm fine with that, too.
That's fine. I'm fine with that, too. That's 100% fine. That doesn't bother me at all. Anything along those lines is totally fine. But like, you had the choice to play that card.
Yeah.
That card that's in your hand, or you had the choice to put a card in your deck that you might not be able to play that would be vulnerable to intrigue. Whereas for pillage, all you did was build a deck and then you're just
rolling. I'm sorry to step on your toes here, Will, but I think we should quibosh this aspect of the conversation because I would actually love to do an episode about intrigue challenges and card advantage. Intrigue challenges, because I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit in Props and Slops, but like having played Magic recently, I actually have a lot of thoughts and feelings about sort of the way in which intrigue challenges and like having to worry about your hand really fundamentally changes the game from Hearthstone and other Eternal and other card games. And it's something that is actually legitimately really unique about Thrones. And I think talking about its consequences in the way the game is played would make a great episode.
I agree. I
agree with you, actually. 2 weeks.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Ooh. Hey, can I make one last pillage thought? I promise it's a fast one.
Sure.
Go for it.
I mean, I don't
know. I think the actual solution is that if your opponent pillages a card you control, you can still play another card.
I mean, that was the original ruling, right?
If your opponent takes scroll. Like, I feel like that just solves most of the variance problem.
I mean, I agree.
I agree with you.
Like, that would be... I feel like if we... Like, that's a change that would be super beneficial for both the game and each other. And, like, even for things like Ward. Like, you no longer have it. Just fucking play another copy.
Thematically, that's rough, but yes.
Thematically, it is rough. Thematically, I don't like it at all. However, like, is that any weirder
Competitively, it makes a lot more sense.
Is that any weirder than thematically Martell playing Martell and now we both just played Ariane and they're looking at each other
right.
And they're different Ariane?
Absolutely.
Whoa. You know what I mean? Like we've already opened that can of worms by the fact that you can play the same house.
I think it's most troublesome with locations, but I definitely agree that it could also be very good for characters.
I mean, if you change the role, I feel like you just change it.
Well, the original ruling was, right, that you could.
And it's not in the rule book. It's a ruling. So it's something that could very easily just be reversed.
Yep.
So it's something that I would very much like to see. It's a very small tweak that would make the game more enjoyable for, I feel like, most.
There's no worse feeling than your Arbor being pillaged and stole with Euron and then you top deck an Arbor. Like.
No, the worst feeling is when it's Dorne. And you just realize, like, no matter what you do as Martell, you cannot possibly win that game because if you've given Greyjoy that card advantage over you and you can't get it back, it's like, that's the end of it. Like, this can go 15 plots and I cannot possibly win.
if they steal your door, it's not going to be.
If they steal
plots,
your door, yes.
No, right.
But that's an accept community.
I got my.
So we can all agree, right?
This afternoon, I got my Dorne stolen turn 1, and I made it to plot 9 before the bell rang, because I was probably playing during my period right. at work.
Oh, I'm just saying, can we all just agree here?
I was up 9
you're playing Martell, and your opponent Euron's your Dorne, you are, it's acceptable to just pick your cards up at that point and save everybody the absolutely. Time, right?
Yeah. Thank you. But seriously, I think that a lot of that stuff leads to a whole episode's worth of topics, as Roy said. So I think for the moment, we should draw this episode to mm-hmm. a close yep. and move on. Props and slops. All right. Well, I'll go.
I'd like to slop pillage.
Damn it, Aaron.
Really hate that. We should fix it. Bye.
Props. Because you guys might have discussed it in your last episode. I don't know. But I don't know when exactly it was or when the announcement was. I've been so busy with work, but. Props to Will Woo! Lentz for getting nationals.
Go Will, and props to the White Book yeah. for being a co-host of U.S. Nationals.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Seriously.
No pressure on you guys, my fellow co-hosts, or anything. Hint, hint.
It could not happen to a better person.
My current absolute plan, particularly now that it is Labor Day weekend rather than Memorial Day weekend, is to be there. I have not seen Springfield, Missouri. I've seen.
Wait. When the hell is Labor Day?
In September. It's right after school comes back in. It's a 3-day weekend.
Nope. Tournament will be the first, second, and third. Tournaments, plural.
So teachers don't get paid over the summer, so I'm extraordinarily poor.
Yeah, I am cashing in some miles to go. So,
nice. Wait, will you have... So you'll have the joust on what day? What day will be Melee?
Sunday, right?
Melee will be Sunday. Joust on Saturday, Melee Sunday, Rookery on Monday.
Can you do overall?
Unfortunately.
You should ask them, be like,
well, Will can do an overall. Come on. It just can't be.
Do you set the schedule or do they lay down the schedule?
We got to set the schedule. We got to figure that out.
I promise you.
We decided to add the Rookery, for instance.
If you moved Melee to Monday instead of Sunday, I'd come. I would come for Melee specifically. That's the only day I could come. I'm probably still going to come for Rookery either way. But if you could move it to Melee, I'd be there.
I'll look into it, but I'm a little worried about any further scheduling changes being made at this point.
I think if you make that minor change, people will not flip out.
I didn't realize the date changed. I'm not going to lie.
You did not see Will's awesome, sexy video of him.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
It was like...
I don't know about me, the suit of armor. Now that's sexy.
No, Will, it's you with the suit of armor, man. Like that's hot. That's like that should be that's like banned in Saudi Arabia. Hot. Like that's
the other thing we're always thinking about.
Oh yeah, oof, easily. But
but not for more than 7
seconds.
All right, go.
7? Phew, you give me way too much credit, Glazer. Particularly when it comes to Will. But anyway, I want to prop the current Magic set, Dominaria, which is
Dominaria,
excuse me, which is really good in sealed. It's very fun, particularly when you pull broken cards.
So, yes, it's good,
man. It is this triumphant journey back to what a lot of Magic was when I first started playing in between Weatherlight and Tempest. For anybody that cares about that, like.
We started.
Feels like coming home.
I stopped playing when you started, Will.
Oh, so, nice.
I stopped at Urza Saga, and I started in Ice Age. So,
yeah, Saga was when I really started like being interested in like buying, like really caring. So, and then I drifted out later. Well, Mirrodin was a dark time for everyone.
So,
all right, so. I want to prop Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
I can't believe they killed Cap and Iron Man and Thor.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I would like to I'd like to prop the Thrones community, actually. I started a new job recently that I've talked about a couple times, and
love you, Jesse.
I did not realize until I didn't talk to people for 2 weeks or didn't play cards for 2 weeks or 3 weeks now how much I missed it.
Yeah.
So I'm getting there's a tournament, Crafters, this weekend. Sadly, I'm not going to see anyone on this cast or Sandy, which is super heartbreaking. He's going to Braavos. Braavos posted it first.
Oh, okay.
Wait. What weekend?
This weekend. This would be the weekend after my birthday, the 28th.
Yep, it's the Braavos. It's
Sandy's in town May 1st. Sorry, I'm trying to work.
That's
out
a while from now, dude. Don't worry about it.
Oh, you're good. But yeah, props to the community. I literally have missed nights like this so much. This has been great.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, we love you, Jesse. We're happy for you about your job, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesse, sir.
For the new job.
Hey, props to Jesse for the props to Dark Nudge for posting the combo list. Posting like, here's how you beat it, stop being annoying. Which was basically what that all those words are. It's like, please stop whining. Here's how you win. We did the thinking for you, just play it. And then people were like, we have more questions. Like, no, you do not get to have more questions now. Go test and figure it out.
Slaps to Dark Nas for posting the combo list the week before I'm going to a tournament.
It's a tough time to live.
Just play shit that beats combo. At this point,
it's a rookery format. I'm actually not that worried about it.
The Greyjoy beats combo anyway.
Yep.
The Greyjoy Wars to Come beats combo, and so does Targ. You'll be fine.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. I'm gonna throw out a kind of tepid props to Super Troopers 2. Not nearly as good as the original, but it was funny.
Is it? I'm super excited.
The original is like one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Classic.
Me and a buddy in high school, we went to the video store, rented it, went home, watched it. And, you know, it's early weekend in a small town. We went back to the video store, dropped it off, got a different movie, came home and watched it. And we were like, wow, that sucked. You want to just go rent Super Troopers again? So then we went back and re-rented Super Troopers the same day. So it had a lot to live up to.
It is definitely like a movie that my wife and I quote like weekly.
Nice.
It's so good.
Props to Daryl. I forgot Weber. His last name already. What's your boy's
Weber.
Name? Weber. Props to Daryl Weber.
Always props to
him. The only Daryl in Thrones. He's a good dude. I just met him. I played him. He happened to be playing my deck. That's how I figured out who he was.
So excited. And everyone's like,
I'm totally not the one who gave it to him. I was like, cool. And he's like, no, it's definitely your deck, dude. I'm like, okay. But yeah, he's a really good dude. I added him
I
on
really
everything.
Didn't
I really
like it. Was the Andy Thrones.
I know. I give absolutely no shits about that deck. That is.
Yeah.
That is just a deck. The good decks are different. I can't believe you're playing Greyjoy, dude.
Why? It's like my heart and soul.
Because it's just not a you style deck. It's just good
stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's some me style stuff in it.
It's like, a mid range deck.
Yeah. I'm definitely running three puts of the swords.
Well, this will air like a million years after Crasters, so opponents will have already bowed down to Jesse winning Crasters at that point.
Are you running Sea Stone?
Of course. Do I ever run a Greyjoy deck without Sea Stone?
I mean, Rain? Yes.
No.
Really?
It's like one of my favorite cards. I don't care.
You're ridiculous.
Targeted kill, man. It's like my favorite thing in the game.
Ugh, my least favorite thing in the game.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I will prop Battletech, which came out today, and I played about 2 hours of. Let me. I can actually look at Steam right now. I've played for 2 hours exactly. Hey, Roy, called it properly. It's pretty good XCOM style.
Oh, very cool.
I bought it for myself for my birthday. And yeah, I'm pretty happy so far. So,
props.
Hey, Roy, what do you want for your birthday?
For my birthday? Peace on Earth and goodwill towards men.
From me, you douche.
I don't know. I'm bad at figuring out what I want from people.
Well, since our regionals have to be on the same day.
Oh, can we slot that? Can we let me combine this. Sorry. First off, I want to prop Jesse because Jesse is such a good tournament organizer that FFG has officially said, oh my God, we're going to put a Midwest regional in the middle of nowhere. No offense to your town. I don't even live there anymore.
No, you're good.
It's in the middle of nowhere. They're like, Jesse did such a fantastic job with his birthday tournament. Some random ass birthday for some random ass organizer that we are going to put a regional there. So props, a million props, Jesse Carpenter.
There are people that still think it's a joke until I post the official list.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, no, there's no way you did. I'm like, I absolutely did. I got a regional June 23rd.
But slops to the fact that FFG put the New York City Dance of Dragons 3 on the same day as Jesse's. This literally broke my heart. Into a million.
It did me too. So now the only thing is the fight for Sandy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope, Jesse, like, honest to goodness, if Sandy doesn't show up to the regional in his own town that he now works 100% in that town, I will never forgive him. So
what's Sandy's rule, though?
It's whoever announced first. But
His rule is whatever tournament gets posted first.
But I told Sandy when it was before you posted it, so.
I don't know.
I mean, if he goes to your tournament, it's fine.
I'm just kidding. He has to go to New York.
Lives is a strong term.
He lives in New York City.
He lives in New York. That's the thing. And he's supposed to be on the organizing committee. This is one of those things. Like, he is credited in the Northeast Championship Tour as one of the co-sponsors. Like, he has to show up.
I also, just because there were a couple guys from Europe who needed the dates pretty early on, I went ahead and posted the dates for next year's birthday tournament, my next name day tournament. So.
Nice.
Yep. I definitely put it not the day before Easter so people can come.
That'd be good. So,
yeah.
Yep. I would like to come as well next year. So,
hey, is this your first engaged episode? Because props to Roy for being engaged.
I don't know if it's my first engaged. No, I was the Martell box. I think we prop because Kevin Austin. I think put congratulations, Roy, on a comment. I was like, oh, is that the one where Alan and I?
Yeah.
I think so.
Like that was the day of.
Then. I think it was probably the day of. But I will always prop being engaged to my lovely fiance, who I will also prop for being very supportive on my birthday. So she's amazing. So all props to her. Props to Kristen as well, because Kristen's amazing. She is amazingly supportive of her friends on the internet. She's supportive of her husband on the internet when he is receiving unnecessary flack. And she is helping you organize this stuff, right, Will?
Wait, you've been getting flack?
Yeah, go figure.
So
go figure.
No, I'm not even kidding. No, I haven't seen Will get flack lit. Like, I'm not even, I've been really busy. I'm sorry, guys.
There were some comments that should not have been there, for sure.
For sure.
Ugh. I'm considered to be one of the nicest people in Thrones, but if anyone has a bad word to say about Will Wentz, you can personal message me.
Jesse's going to collect them and roast me with them later.
That's not how Jesse rolls.
Nope.
That's more of a Kyle Vansel style danger zone.
So true. That definitely closes this chapter of the White Book.